is D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan, the Team 980, and the Odyssey app. You can tweet me at The Denton Day. Joining us now, talk a little bit about the Washington Nationals, maybe a little bit about this Brandon Ayuk situation as well, is the great Al Galdi. You can find his podcast, the Al Galdi Podcast, and the Nats Chat Podcast, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Al, appreciate you joining us, my friend. As always, always good to talk to you. Big news for the Nationals yesterday, C.J. Abrams named a starter for the NL All-Star team at shortstop. What was your reaction when you saw that come across?
Yeah, well deserved. I mean, he's had a really good season. This is the C.J. Abrams who we've always thought could be there, at times has been there, but there's been, you know, sort of an up and down nature to him in recent years where he's had months in which he's been like a superstar, and then he's had months in which he's been really bad, to be honest with you. And so to see him put it all together, certainly offensively so far this season, has been awesome. I think it's a credit to him. It's a credit to the Nats new analytics-based process. You know, I think the nit to pick with Abrams still would be the defense. He's not a particularly good defensive shortstop, and a lot of people think long-term he's not a shortstop, that he maybe gets moved to second base. But I'll say this, I think the defense in recent weeks has been better. So, you know, I'd like to see what those defensive numbers are by the end of the season. But, you know, even with the defense, like, the offense has been there. And the key for him, and this is what's going to be so interesting the rest of the season, is does he avoid what has doomed him in recent seasons, and that is the prolonged slump. He has had seasons in which it looks like he's having a great season, and then he slumps, and the numbers end up being not bad, but not what they were. He's done a good job this season of making sure that those numbers remain very good, and does he continue to do that post the All-Star break? That's going to be interesting to follow, but great to see him get in, and great to see him get voted in. He got voted in over a Dodger in Mookie Betts, which is not something I think most people expected.
Hey, I saw that, and I was like, whoa, this is a new Nationals, because that would have never happened a few years ago. I'm glad you mentioned the slump, because I was going to ask about that. How much do you think the new management is going to help him kind of avoid that period that he's seen over the past few years?
I think a lot. I mean, I think one of the biggest things with the Nats this season, and you try to make sense of how in the world this offense is performing at this elite level, and this team is so well prepared, and this team from a baseball operation standpoint is in a place that the team has never been in, because the team is embracing analytics and sports science. And one of the real, I think, telltale signs about the offense being prepared is how good this team has been in first innings. The Nats for this season haven't just been elite in terms of run scoring. The Nats have been elite in terms of first inning run scoring. So they are getting to opposing starting pitchers early. For those who've been like watching this team game in, game out, you know this. The Nats have been good against good starting pitchers. Like, you know, when you see that the Nats are facing someone who's having a good season, that's not like a big deal. You know, the Nats come out and so often this season have gotten to those guys early in games. And so I think this staff is going to have C.J. Abrams well prepared. You know, the onus is on him to stay engaged, stay locked in. I do think that that has been an issue in the past. I think if you talk to people with the team, Abrams last season became disengaged, which was disappointing to see. But with this team in contention, and that's what this team is, this team is in playoff contention, I don't see any reason for Abrams not to be fully locked in. And one of the things that the manager, Blake Butera, has talked about is how Abrams is demonstrating a real maturity this season, that he's emerged as a leader. He's, you know, putting in a lot of work. And I think Abrams has kind of realized, hey, I've got all the talent in the world. I'm going to be as good as I want to be. And if I just put in the work and put in the effort and put in the focus, I can be the guy who I have been hoped to be by this team. And we're seeing that so far this season. So it's been really nice to see.
Al Galdi with us here on 106.7 The Fan. Denton Day with you on a Sunday. James Wood also named an all-star. Galdi, not a starter, though. Were you surprised that he was a reserve and not in the starting lineup?
Yeah, this is one of the weirdest things I can ever remember, because Abrams got so many more votes than Wood. And I don't understand why. If you're a Nats fan, you're voting for both. I mean, it's not like it's a gray area issue with James Wood. He is a slam dunk all-star. His offensive numbers are better than Abrams. I mean, Wood has been the Nats MVP. Wood has been the best player on this team this season. So I'm very happy that Abrams got voted in. I find it really odd that Wood did not get voted in, because you think the same people voting for Abrams would be voting for Wood. And I've had these conversations on the podcast. Like, why is that? Like, I don't get it. I don't know if maybe a lot of Abrams' votes came from people across the country, and like they just were voting for Abrams but not Wood. There's actually a theory that because Abrams' last name starts with an A and Wood's last name starts with a W, that maybe Wood got lost in the alphabet when it came to people selecting who to vote for, and that's why Wood didn't get as many votes. I mean, that theory doesn't make much sense to me, but like that is a theory. But it's strange, man, because again, it's not even like a conversation with James Wood. He absolutely should be an all-star. He should be a starter. Look, at the end of the day, what matters is that the Nats got two all-stars. First time they've had at least two position players in an all-star game since 2021. So, like, that's the bigger picture takeaway. But it's a very strange deal that Abrams, and it's not like he got, like, 1,000 more votes than Wood. He got, like, tens of thousands of more votes than James Wood. And nobody can seem to figure out why.
So you mentioned something, you know, really interesting there that we haven't been able to say in a very long time, which is the team is still competitive. And we're now in the month of July, where I think it's fair to start really paying attention to the standings. With that said, we are also creeping closer and closer to the trade deadline, where some decisions are going to have to be made. Are you anticipating that they might be more buyers rather than sellers at the deadline because of the way the season has gone so far?
I am. Now, I think the question becomes, to what extent are they buyers? What can they accomplish via buying? But yeah, you know, if this season had gone the way a lot of people thought, and that is this team, you know, tracking toward having a win total in the 60s, then I think you unquestionably would see Paul Toboni be an aggressive seller. And so you'd see a Foster Griffin be traded. You'd see a Zach Littell be traded, to whatever extent he could be traded. I mean, he's not having a great season, but and you know, with Abrams, I mean, that's been the big thing of, is he going to be kept or is he going to be traded given where he's at contractually? I think it's very possible you would have seen Abrams traded. Now, I don't think you're going to see Abrams traded. I don't think you're going to see Griffin be traded, because the Nats are going to be in contention beyond the trade deadline. At this point, it would take a real collapse for them not to be. Now that there are three wild card spots in each league, and now that in MLB you have it so that unless you're really bad, you are mathematically in contention for the bulk of the regular season. The Nats are in it, you know, and it's just going to be a question of like to what degree they are in it. And so, you know, as we get closer to that deadline, and we are still a decent ways away, it's not till August 3rd, but, you know, are they like a game out of the last wild card spot? Are they four games out of the last wild card spot? Are they maybe in possession of one of those wild card spots? Winning the division is going to be tough because Atlanta has established such a big league. And actually, the National League East, if you look at the standings, you can make a very strong case that the NL East is the toughest division in the sport, because the Nats, Miami, Philadelphia, and Atlanta all are having good seasons to varying degrees. But the Nats are in it. And so at this point, it would be really surprising if Toboni was an aggressive seller. And so, yeah, I think they're going to be buyers. They need bullpen help. The question is going to be, like, how much buying does Toboni do? Like, does he get one reliever? Does he try to get multiple relievers? What does he have to give up to get those relievers? So that's what's going to be so interesting about this.
Yeah, the bullpen needs some drastic help. We got the Pirates today, Nats Pirates, final game of the series. Cavalli scheduled to go. What has been your thought on the week that he has been involved with?
Well, you know, it's a shame that the incident happened, because he was so good in that game. He pitched like an ace in that game. And even after the incident, he pitched like an ace. He in no way was thrown off track by that incident, which I thought was maybe as impressive as anything from him. I don't think he meant anything racial or offensive by using the word boy. I think it's something that he says. You know, it's kind of a gray area issue, I know, because, you know, boy, certainly for black people, boy is a no-no. You should never say that. I think for a Hispanic person, it's a little, it's more gray area. And it's actually been kind of funny online. There's been a lot of debate of like, well, is it offensive or isn't it offensive? You know, that kind of a thing. But it can be taken in an offensive way. Cavalli has been very remorseful. He multiple times has given these like over the top apologies. And I don't say that in a negative way. I'm just saying like he's gone like above and beyond, I think, what you would want or expect anyway. in terms of expressing remorse. Paul Toboni has been very supportive of Cavalli. So, you know, I would like to hope that this now can sort of be put behind everyone. The 7-game suspension was unfortunate because that's what Wilson Contreras got, and Contreras threw a batting helmet in the incident. Cavalli did no such thing. But it is different for starting pitchers. So, you know, you get a 7-game suspension, but in a lot of ways it could end up being only a 1-game suspension because you can only miss the one start. So, you know, there's that element of it. I think he's going to pitch. He's going to pitch today. We know that. And then it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because I think it's entirely possible what he'll do. You know, he's appealing the suspension. There's some strategy here from the Nats. I think Cavalli may well pitch today and then drop the appeal and then just serve the suspension, or pitch today, have the appeal heard on Monday, and let's say the suspension gets reduced by a game or two, then you just go ahead and serve the suspension at that point. But I think the Nats are smart to try to get in another Cavalli start before we could see the implementation of the suspension. It's a tricky deal. The suspensions were levied on Thursday. All of the guys suspended, both Nats players and Red Sox players, appealed. But we don't know exactly when the appeals will be heard. They haven't yet been heard. There's an expectation they will be heard on Monday. I think it's a little ridiculous that it takes multiple days for appeals to be heard. But I guess it being a weekend, especially a holiday weekend, maybe complicated things. But, yeah, it's too bad the incident happened. You know, I think all these guys are intense competitors. You know, I don't think this incident has to be the end of the world. I don't think it has to be a bigger deal than it needs to be. But I think the bigger item here from a Nats perspective is Cade Cavalli, who was looking like a bust. Okay, this guy was a first-round pick in 2020. He now finally actually may be working out. And this may be the rare thing of it takes a long time for a first-round pick to become a hit, but it may well be that Cavalli is blossoming into the hit who he was drafted to be. It's one of many encouraging storylines with this Nats season.
All right, Al, so I got one football question for you, and I'll get you out of here. Week one, is Brandon Ayuk a member of the Commanders?
I'm going to say yes. I'm not as confident in the yes today as I would have been a few weeks ago, but I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that it's going to be worth the gamble from a standpoint of a low-money, low-risk, high-upside contract. My North Star with all of this as a Washington fan has been that the Commanders and Jaden Daniels and Adam Peters and, you know, you can go beyond those two, like Wes Welker, Anthony Lynn, have people who have worked with Ayuk and or know Ayuk well and or know the Niners well. So I've always had this sort of faith in, okay, our team has intel here that other people don't, other teams don't. When it comes to what is the truth about what has happened between Ayuk and the Niners? What is the truth about the condition of Ayuk's knee? What is the truth about the condition of Ayuk's mental state? I would like to think that the Commanders have intel that many others do not. And so I've always felt like whatever Washington does will be an informed decision, will be on the basis of having key information. Now, what is that information? We don't know. And, you know, you look at all the Instagram stuff and, like, sometimes you laugh, okay, as I do. I think some of the stuff he puts up is funny. And then sometimes you're like, okay, man, like, what exactly is the deal with this guy? He looks to be unhinged. I don't know the truth. I don't pretend to know the truth. I did think there was a bit of an overreaction to the stuff with him and Jaden Daniels on Instagram yesterday, because it does appear to be just two friends needling each other as opposed to this, like, dramatic breakup that happened over social media. But if I had to guess, given Ayuk's talent, given that Washington, let's be honest, does, I think, have a need at receiver, I think they will roll the dice on this. But yeah, it's hard to know, man. And if he doesn't end up playing for Washington this season, I won't be stunned. But if you're telling me yes or no, I would say yes, week one, Ayuk's out there.
Galdi, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Be well. Always good to catch up.
Okay, thank you.
That is Al Galdi, Nats Chat Podcast. You can catch him on the Al Galdi Podcast and follow him on Twitter at Al Galdi. So he says, yes, Brandon Ayuk is going to be a member of the Washington Commanders come week one. What do you say? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. I'm also looking at some of the offensive numbers as it relates to James Wood and C.J. Abrams. And I am also stunned that James Wood was not a starter, and I'm growing to be stunned that he was thousands, tens of thousands of votes short of C.J. Abrams. He leads the Nationals in almost every major offensive category. I mean, Abrams has a slightly, like ever so slightly, better batting average at 270 versus 269. So literally like the slightest of margins. But Wood is better in every other statistical category on offense. So that's very interesting that he was not a starter in the National League. But we do know that the outfield in particular is where many of the stars reside. We'll see what happens. You know, you get to the All-Star game, and for whatever reason, a guy gets sick, a guy tweaks a hammy, back's a little sore, I'm not going to play, so maybe he gets moved into the starting lineup. I also think that line of, tweaked my back, is going to allow a pitcher for the Nationals to jump up into the All-Star rotation as well, or in the All-Star game as well. So I do think the team's going to end up with at least three All-Stars by the time we get to the All-Star game. They're in action today against Pittsburgh. That's a 1 o'clock pitch. Pregame starts as soon as we're done at 12:30 right here on 106.7 The Fan. And as of right now, it is scheduled to be Cade Cavalli. He's appealing his suspension that was levied out earlier this week. And because of that appeal, he could play today. So it really, you're basically racing Major League Baseball and really taking advantage of the holiday weekend in that, hey, you're probably not looking at a suspension on the 4th of July. Go enjoy the fireworks. Go enjoy the glizzies. Go have fun. If you're at the beach, go over there. They're letting people not work in Major League Baseball. So I do think that that is really smart play by the Nationals, and that's allowed Cade Cavalli to go today. So I'm expecting him to go today. If anything changes on that before we get to Nationals pregame, we'll be the first to let you know. But we'll continue to take some more of your phone calls on Brandon Ayuk, 800-636-1067. I got a few more tweets on this as well. I'm Denton Day. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan, the Team 980, the Odyssey app, an hour away from pregame Nationals and Pirates. The expectation is that Cade Cavalli is going for the Nationals. Last night, C.J. Abrams named an All-Star starter. Last night, James Wood named an All-Star reserve. So hoping for big performances from both of those guys today. Wood hit a homer yesterday, which, not to brag, pat myself on the back, did tell you that yesterday on 106.7 The Fan right here. James Wood, anytime homer on 4th of July. They need a better offensive performance today. They need a better pitching performance today because what happened yesterday against the Pirates, this is not the Pirates of the last few years. You know, Pittsburgh's actually a pretty decent team, but I still think the Nationals are better than them, and that should not happen again, especially if you're trying to be competitive as you get closer and closer to the All-Star break and closer to the trade deadline. One of our main topics of the day has been Brandon Ayuk and the drama between him and Jaden Daniels. Taking some of your calls at 800-636-1067. You can tweet me as well at the Denton Day. Zach tweets me, says, Denton, per Mike Florio last night, Jaden Daniels has the final say on Brandon Ayuk's fate. Will be interesting to see how it plays out. So I read that during the break and I missed this from Mike Florio. Pulled it up, went back and read his article, and basically, it's a summary of what happened yesterday. The Instagram videos with Brandon Ayuk going at Jaden Daniels. It stemmed because Jaden Daniels was in a video at a soccer game where someone was cussing out Brandon Ayuk to Jaden Daniels, and he just laughed and walked away. Now, this person was a fan, and it was a fan in the stands where Jaden was in a suite. So he's like pointing the camera, looking up at him. You know, the way that you've seen these sorts of things before, if you haven't seen this exact video, but he's pointing the camera up at him, and then Jaden just walks away and is now not in view of the camera. That's how the high ground works. Brandon Ayuk didn't like that, called him out on social media in a photo, and then posted a video. And Wes, I'm going to ask that we can play this again for anyone that maybe didn't see this yesterday. So he called him out in the photo first, where he said, what's funny about this? Get your savage up. And then Jaden Daniels didn't do anything with that. Then Brandon Ayuk posted this video going at Jaden Daniels, the first time that he'd ever really gone at Jaden Daniels in this 3-4 month process.
Fire gonna text me and talk about something. You on my team now. You follow my rules. Boy, I'm a grown ass man, boy. You're going to have to start running behind your mama, and I might believe what you're talking about. But until then,
So that's a video from Brandon Ayuk. Jaden Daniels responded with a Kevin Durant double thumbs down photo, no video, just a photo. And then Brandon Ayuk held up a pair of cleats and basically dared Jane Daniels to play the entire season. That's the thing I didn't like the most about that. Like, easy there, buddy. He dared Jane Daniels to play the entire season and said if he played the entire season, that he himself would also play the entire season. That's where we're at now. Mike Florio's piece detailed all of that. But at the very end, as Zach put out, and I mean, you want to talk about burying the lead a little bit here. He ends, this is the third to last paragraph, like the fifth to last sentence in the article. Regardless, Daniels is the key to Ayuk landing with the Commanders. If Daniels wants Ayuk, the front office will be inclined to go along. If Daniels doesn't, it won't happen. So the pressure of the decision-making is on Jane Daniels. I hope to the letter of the word this is not entirely accurate. I don't know that, as much as I love Jane Daniels, I don't know that I want the front office just bending the knee immediately to everything that he says, in particular with this one guy. Right? If there was none of this social media stuff, this would be pretty easy. If it was just the 49ers dogging him and dogging him and dogging him, and then he says, I'm going to fire my agent, I'm going to apply for reinstation, and then you're going to cut me, and they just did all that without the social media stuff, then I think it would be fine. But because of the social media stuff, I think as the front office, you have to weigh options a little bit more than just, hey, quarterback, do you want a guy that you're clearly very good friends with? Because I do believe this is a bit between the two guys. It's not a good one. It's not a great one. I don't really know what's gained from this, if we're being honest. The unfollowing on Instagram, the back and forth, the low-hanging fruit of the mom joke, the low-hanging fruit of, hey, you didn't play all of last season, as if Brandon Ayuk played all of last. Like, the bit isn't a good one. This is not winning awards. I mean, it might win. What's the award for things that suck? I know there's one out there. Like, it might win one of those awards because this is not a good bit, but this is just kind of where we're at now in this saga. And I'm ashamed to admit that throughout the entirety of the show, we've been on for 90 minutes. We got another hour here. For the entirety of the show, I have been continually refreshing Brandon Ayuk's Instagram page to see A, if he has posted again, or B, if he has followed Jane Daniels back. I am not proud that I'm doing this, but it is the cross that I'm deciding to bear on this Sunday morning. I am the Brandon Ayuk reporter, at least until 12:30, and then somebody else is taking over my shift, because I'm not going to sit here and refresh this guy's Instagram page for the entirety of the day. And I'm also checking to see if Jane Daniels has followed him back. The answer to that is no. Though with that said, Jaden is in California, and Brandon Ayuk seemingly is here. A few other tweets. Luis tweets me and says, neither Ayuk or Diggs called Jacksonville and asked about Brian Thomas Jr. I am loving the bit where if you need wide receiver help, just go find one of Jane Daniels' old teammates. Oh, if Brandon Ayuk's not going to work, go to Brian Thomas Jr., who had a great rookie season, didn't do too well last year in Jacksonville, and was rumored to be on the trade block. That doesn't work out. You know, Kayshon Boutte is potentially available in New England, and he played a season with Jane Daniels at LSU. It wasn't the Heisman season. It was the one before that, but they know each other, so you can go see if he is available. I think we've all been waiting and praying for the eventual Malik Nabers doing the Brandon Ayuk to where Malik Nabers wants out of New York, and he's going to come to Washington. We're just going and finding Jane Daniels' old teammates. Did he play with anybody in high school that's now in the NFL that plays wide receiver? With that said, I do like Brian Thomas Jr. I don't love him. I do like him. If they're asking for minuscule in return, I would be interested. If they're asking for a lot in return, which it seems like they were last year, because it is, I mean, they drafted him 2 years ago in the first round. You're going to try and get something back for him that is substantial, more than like a fifth round pick. If they're asking for a lot in return, I'd pump the brakes a little bit and say, I don't know that I would be interested in that. But if he's available on the low, I would go get Brian Thomas Jr. And you get Brian Thomas on one side, you get Terry McLaurin on the other side, and you get Antonio Williams in the middle. In fact, all being fair, that would be my preferred option of everything, because Brian Thomas Jr. is young, so you get the youth that comes with a guy like that, and you could potentially see him and envision him as the wide receiver one long term when Terry McLaurin eventually moves on or retires or whatever. But on top of that, he doesn't seem to have any issues with social media. He doesn't seem to have any issues off of the field the way that Diggs has in the past. His main issue was that he doesn't like going over the middle, and that was kind of what hampered him in his second year in Jacksonville. You might be able to coach that out of him, though. You put the right people around him, say, hey, man, like, they can't really hit you in today's NFL as hard as they could years ago anyway. So just go over the middle, and it'll be fine. Aaron tweets me saying, I'm not super familiar with the addition of JD, but I wonder how much attention is he really giving this himself? I can't imagine he's got time to care. So my thought on this, Aaron, has always been that they have been in conversation, Brandon Ayuk and Jane Daniels. They've been in constant conversation. I don't know that they're like the super duper besties, but I definitely think they're really good friends. I don't know that they're texting every single day, but they're probably texting multiple times a week. So I think that Jaden has thought long and hard about this one, and I think that's the reason this is a thing. If Jaden would go to the front office and say, no, this is not a thing anymore. Because if he says no, that no gets back to Brandon Ayuk, and then Brandon Ayuk is not doing this on social media. Or maybe he is, and it's just all attacking Jaden Daniels. From at that point, he is now not in the league because San Francisco is not going to – he doesn't want to play there. He's made that very clear. And at this point, he's been so heavy in favor of, I want to play in Washington, that I don't know anybody else would be running up to sign him. I mean, unless he wants to go enjoy the Cleveland Browns quarterback battle of Shador Sanders and Deshaun Watson. Ugh. Great. Imagine that's going to be a lot of fun. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, at The Denton Day on Twitter. We'll take some of your calls if you got them. We'll continue reading some of your tweets. We'll pivot a little bit, though, to a little bit of Wizards basketball. The LeBron James to D.C. thing is dead. I'm going to tell you why that's good when we get back on 106.7 The Fan. We're talking with Ben Strober in 20 minutes here on 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C. You can tweet me at The Denton Day. And it sure seems like LeBron James is going back to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Reports are suggesting that most teams across the NBA are expecting him to return to Cleveland. Thank God. And thank God it's not here. That was a very fun day on social media when it was announced that LeBron was going to entertain all 30 teams, or 29 teams, because the Lakers weren't a part of it. He was going to entertain all 29 teams, and Washington is one of those 29 teams. And then we could go back in a podcast that he did with Steve Nash when he said that Washington has something going in the right direction. And we can go back and look at his old tweets about how much he loves his time in D.C., and we can make the very obvious connections of Anthony Davis being in D.C., being repped by Rich Paul, who reps LeBron James. There's a clear friendship between LeBron James and Anthony Davis, so much so that at one point it was reported that he would only go to Golden State if they traded for Anthony Davis. And we can put all of those things together and say, wow, this would be great if LeBron James came here to D.C. And I would still tell you the same thing. Thank God it is not happening. I love the direction where Washington is going right now in terms of what they are building. The youth that they have on this roster mixed with the veterans. Anthony Davis has won a championship in the bubble, but still. Trae Young has been deep into the postseason. The city of New York still hates that man. They won a championship. They still chant F Trae Young in the streets. That's how important our point guard is to the lore of the New York Knicks. So the balance of youthfulness and veteran experience that is talented, it's a very, very nice blend of what they have going on here. And as much as I love LeBron James, because I like watching LeBron James play basketball, it took me a little bit after the Gilbert thing in 2006. It took me years to get back on board with watching LeBron James play basketball. In fact, they had to lose to the Mavericks when he was with the Miami Heat before I finally said, my time hating on this dude is done. As great as I think he is, it is impossible to deny that if LeBron James comes here, everything shifts dramatically.
It's a fun idea.
It's a fun idea. The execution of it was going to be awful.
Let's not pretend the Wizards were not the laughingstock of the NBA. That's the problem.
That is the problem. Although I did read a report. This is a thing from a high journalist in Minnesota, that the Timberwolves actually pitched themselves by being, imagine what it would be like for your legacy if you took our lousy ass to the finals. That's a real pitch that was made to LeBron James. And I'm so glad the Wizards are not that level of desperate. You know how desperate you have to be like, look at how bad we've been.
I know.
You'd be better than Jordan if you got us to the championship. Like, that's such loser behavior. And Washington is now carrying themselves as that's not us anymore. And to be honest, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm guzzling the Kool-Aid at this point. I think Washington and the Wizards have a really solid roster in an Eastern Conference that I don't really love. You know, the Knicks are the Knicks. They are the champs. You got to beat them before anyone's going to say that you're better than the Knicks. Jalen Brunson's a great player. I would love it if Trae Young has like a Jalen Brunson kind of season. I don't know if that's going to happen. Jalen Brunson is one of the best players in the NBA. Everybody's better than Jalen Brunson until it's time to be better than Jalen Brunson. And that's why they're the champs. Philadelphia right now, I'd say, is positioned at number two in the Eastern Conference. Toronto is probably number three. If LeBron goes to Cleveland, that's defensively one of the worst teams because Donovan Mitchell doesn't play defense. James Harden is awful on defense. And LeBron at 42 should not be tasked with playing high-level defense. It's a lot of weight that Mobley and Jared Allen are going to be carrying on that Cleveland lineup. Boston got way worse. The Wizards right now are better than Boston. Your best player is coming off a massive Achilles injury. The Wizards right now, I trust them better than Boston. I trust them more than the Heat right now. Giannis and Bam are a nice combination. I don't trust that guard play. And Giannis proved last year that he needs a lot of help if he's going to be really, really good because he couldn't get that Bucks team to the postseason. So the Wizards are sitting in a nice spot. They're going to be ironically competing with Atlanta, I feel like, for like the fifth or sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. And I love the positioning right now. They added DeAndre Ayton. And DeAndre Ayton is your starting center. Not great. DeAndre Ayton is your rotational guy. That's a really good rotational guy. He's a career 15-10 guy. You're not going to get 15-10 from him if he's only playing 15 to 22 minutes, which is what I would consider the sweet spot to be with DeAndre Ayton. But if you get DeAndre Ayton playing 15 minutes and he's playing a good quality 15 minutes alongside a litany of potential lineups that Washington could put on the floor, I feel pretty comfortable with that. They got like 10, 11 dudes, the Wizards do. Now, some of that is relying on like Trey Johnson taking a nice step, which I think he's going to. On Keyshawn George taking a nice step, which I think that he's going to. On A.J. DeBonta finding his footing in the NBA, which I think he is going to do. I'm putting a lot of faith in a lot of different people in this organization, but I feel pretty comfortable with that based off of the way that they've been moving over the past few years. So while it stinks that we won't see LeBron James in the Wizards jerseys, it is a very, very nice thing to kind of understand this is the team moving forward. You're going to get Trey. I imagine the starting lineup is Trey Young, Keyshawn George, A.J. DeBonta, Anthony Davis, Alex Saar in that order with George playing the two, DeBonta playing the three, though I think those two things can be interchangeable. And then you can kind of shuffle in like a Trey Johnson, like a Bilal Coulibaly, Bob Carrington, obviously a DeAndre Ayton, Will Riley. Like, they have a bunch of dudes that I feel like are solid, solid players. I feel really comfortable with the Wizards. Detroit's a team I didn't mention. I think Detroit's going to be pretty good next year as well because Cade Cunningham is becoming a legitimate MVP contender. But honestly, it's not going to surprise me. The Magic played really well at the end of the season and pushing Detroit a little bit. I don't know that the Magic are a great team. The Wizards are going to be right in contention with some of those teams. Your Hawks, your Orlandos, your Bostons, although, I think they're better than Boston. Your Miamis, your Charlottes, I think they're better than Charlotte. They're going to be in contention with a lot of those teams, and I think the Wizards are going to be a playoff team. Not a play-in team, a playoff team in 2026 and 2027, and that's really, really exciting. We'll get more on that with Ben Strober of the Locked On Wizards podcast in 15 minutes. A few more things I want to touch on real quickly here when we get back. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. We are leaving the Team 980 at the top of the hour, so you want to hear the remainder of the show, yeah, switch over to 106.7 The Fan or the Odyssey app. Ben Strober is going to join us at noon, Nats pregame at 12:30, and the Nats and Pirates final game of the series at 1. The expectation, as of right now, is that Cade Cavalli is pitching for the Nationals. They have not tweeted out their starting lineups officially yet. He is appealing his 7-game suspension that was levied after the Wilson Contreras issue that took place earlier this week. But because he's appealing his suspension, they get a Cade Cavalli start, so long as that suspension does not get, or that appeal does not get denied prior to first pitch. I don't know what would happen if they deny the appeal in the middle of the game. I think maybe they have to wait till the end of the game. I don't know if anything's ever happened like that before in baseball. I'm sure it has over the 100 plus year history of the game. But that would be a very unique set of circumstances if in like the third inning he's dealing and then someone from the league office is like, no, he can't play. You got to yank him. We decided that the appeal did not work. Hopefully that does not happen, especially if he is really playing well. At the Denton Days, where you can tweet me. We talked a lot about Brandon Ayuk over the course of today's show. I am refreshing his Instagram page way too frequently just to make sure that I don't miss a Brandon Ayuk post. I'm going to be very upset when he posts at like 12:45 right after the show ends. But that's somebody else's watch. I have gotten a couple of tweets, little tweets, being says, Denton, seems like we're dealing with a spoiled brat. Bring him in and send him straight to St. Eve's Hospital for an evaluation ASAP. Well, I think he has good insurance if he does come in with a commander, so they might be able to do something like that. I do wonder. I don't really wonder what Jane Daniels feels about this, because I am of the belief that he still wants Brandon Ayuk to be here. Instagram drama notwithstanding. First of all, I just think their relationship is, unless there was something else that took place, I think their relationship is strong enough to overcome a silly video from a fan. Because a quarterback's not going to respond to a fan. I mean, let's be very clear about one thing. Your quarterback should not be getting into it with a fan at a soccer match, especially when that fan is potentially inebriated. I don't know that individual. Maybe they're, I don't know, but potentially inebriated. I'm going to guess if you're sticking the phone in the face of a quarterback and yelling F this dude, F that dude, you're probably not 100% sober. Or if you do, maybe a drink would chill you out a little bit. But I don't know what you want the quarterback to do in that case if it is serious. I don't think it is. I think they're just messing around. I don't understand what the purpose of the messing around is at this point. It doesn't feel like you're gaining a whole lot by doing this other than attention on social media. But do you really need the attention on social media? And that worries me a little bit, because if the answer to this question is yes and that Brandon Ayuk is desperate for the attention on social media, that becomes a problem. Because I have been decently pro Ayuk in this entire process, because I think the talent makes the team significantly better. But in my mind, I was also living off of the opinion that once he gets here, the social media stuff is over. You know, when you put pen to paper and we see in that conference room and the logo's back behind you, it's a nice wooden table. The gloss on the table is nice. You're there with your wife, not agent, because he doesn't have one at the moment, but you're there with your wife and your kid, and it's a celebration. You're finally here. You're a commander. You can actually go to commanders.com and buy tickets, like all these things, right? When that day inevitably happens, the phone goes away. The Instagram goes away. You can tweet. You can put out some highlights. You know, you want to lift up some of your teammates. If Rashad White, you know, a former Sun Devil, plays well and you want to post some of his highlights, that's sick. But like the actual back and forth on social media where you're like doing all the crazy, like that's over with. That was my thought as soon as he got here. But if there really is, hey, I need to be relevant on social media that's gripping the guy, I'm good. I don't need that. Because we don't know what you're actually going to look like on the field. I have reason to believe he's going to be good. Modern medicine, the knee injury was tough, but modern medicine, he's still relatively young. George Kittle told us that rehab was going well. He slipped up a little bit, shouldn't have said that. I don't think people in San Francisco were happy that he said that. But he told us that Brandon Ayuk is playing, or he is moving relatively well. I have reason to believe he's going to be good on the field when he starts playing again. But too much social media, I'm good. I don't need those distractions on this team, especially as this team is looking to revert back to 2024 and really get over the disaster that was 2025. The quarterback in particular looking to get over the disaster that was 2025. A lot on that specific play. A lot on the Wizards play. Ben Strober, Locked On Wizards, going to be with us on the other side. Give us his thoughts on them missing out on LeBron James. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. D-Day in D.C., Denton Day on 106.7, The Fan, Nats baseball at the top of the hour. They get the Pirates, their final game of the series. Pre-game starts in about 30 minutes. We do have a little bit of a stunning revelation. This is from Grant Paulson on Twitter. The Nats DFA'd Robert Hassel. They needed a 40-man spot to call up lefty reliever Eddie Yean, and Hassel is the odd man out. So that's pretty stunning. As of right now, Cade Cavalli is going to pitch for the Nationals. He's appealing his suspension that was levied out earlier this week, and he is getting the start today, scheduled to, for Washington. We'll keep you updated if anything changes between now and the start of Nationals pregame. But right now, we're going back to the hardwood, going back to the Wizards. We go to the phone lines. Our guy Ben Strobe with the Locked On Wizards podcast, good enough to make some time for us on a Sunday. Ben, it sure seems like that LeBron James is going to the Cavaliers, maybe the Warriors, but we know he's not going to the Wizards. Are we stunned by this revelation, or was this always going to be the case?
It seems like this was always the most realistic possibility, and I think even back to at some point in the regular season, I was starting to think about that. What is LeBron going to do next? Because he's been in LA for 8 years. It seems like that time, that chapter is probably done, and we know that he probably only has one or two more years left in this league, and he's going to be the first player to play 24 years, which is pretty ridiculous. But with that in itself, it always made sense that going home to Cleveland would make sense, not only just because that's where he started, that's where he's from, he'd like to ideally win them another championship, but they have the pieces, I think, necessary to build a formidable enough squad to do so. I'm not a big fan of James Harden. I don't think he's necessarily a guy you can win with in the playoffs, and this year was another example of that. You have 16 years of sample size that you can't win with James Harden, so I don't know if that's going to magically change with LeBron, but I think it does make the most sense that he is in the Eastern Conference as opposed to the West. The Warriors never really made a lot of sense to me unless they had this miracle plan go through with AD going out there, but the Warriors offer for what they could give the Wizards for AD is not really worth the Wizards' time.
No, not at all. There was nothing there. Maybe with James Harden, I think the old folklore goes a 17th time is the charm. So maybe they'll figure something out there. So with LeBron not coming here, then we have a pretty good grasp of what this roster is going to look like by the start of the regular season. They added DeAndre Ayton. Before we get to the overall roster, I like the DeAndre Ayton move, especially as your third big guy. What did you feel like, or how did you feel about the move to add DeAndre Ayton?
If you're adding Ayton to be a starter, I'm pretty lukewarm on that, but considering it seems like the expectation is he comes off the bench and he's a very serviceable, durable depth piece for this team, just for two second-round picks and a player in Jaden Hardy, who's not bad, but I didn't really see where he would fit in the rotation next year, just considering where he is positionally. He kind of fits in the same mold as Trey Johnson and Bob Carrington, and obviously they have a lot more allegiance to those two guys because of, one, what they've accomplished so far, and two, their homegrown drafted players of the organization. So Hardy always seemed like he was going to be the odd man out to me, and considering what his salary was, $6 million, I figured he would be a candidate to get dumped at some point. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And considering what Ayton is, he's a productive player in the league. He's going to provide you some of that rebounding that I think they really need off the bench right now, because Anthony Davis and Alex Saar are not the most reliable to be on the floor every single night. So Ayton easily is a guy that if he has to fill in and start for a couple of games, he can do so. He averaged 15 and 8 last year, or 10. I can't remember what the exact rebound total was. The rebounding numbers were down a little bit for him last year, but he played and started in 72 games. He was durable, and sometimes there's been the questions with him motor-wise and what that exactly looks like. I know it obviously didn't really work for him in Portland the last couple of years before he went out to Los Angeles, but the cost being as low as it was, and it fills a major need they had in the front court just for a little bit of depth, I don't really see anything wrong with this move.
So Ben Sterber with us, Locked On Wizards. Now that we have a pretty good idea, you know, barring a stunning change, what the roster is going to look like, how would you set the five-man starting lineup?
I think you're going to go with Trae Young. Obviously, he's your offensive engine. He'll start at the one. The two is where it gets really interesting. And you have three potential candidates, in my opinion, between Trey Johnson, Keyshawn George, and then Bilal Coulibaly.
But the one thing I keep coming back to is that Will Dawkins and Michael Winger, every time they have spoken since the draft selection of A.J. DiBonsa, they keep on referring to him as a guard. So whether or not they're going to put him at the two early on in his career is going to be something that's interesting. He has pretty good playmaking skills and other ancillaries that make him adequate to be a massive 6'9" guard. So that's something I might be on the lookout for. But then it comes down to, do you have Keyshawn George on the floor playing in any one of these 2 through 4 positions, because you need what he is as a two-way threat. He's a guy that could shoot the ball really well. And then obviously he's also adequate on the defensive side, comparative to some of the other guys. But how much do you value a guy like Bilal Coulibaly, who's definitely going to make his money on the defensive end? He had a pretty strong offensive output in the last couple weeks of the season, but he lacked a little bit of consistency with his jump shot, and hence why the three-point shot has gotten worse for him over the last 2 years. If Coulibaly can consistently knock down his shot on the outside, and we know that Trae Young generates a ton of looks for players on this team and everywhere he's been throughout his career, when he was in Atlanta, one of the best playmakers in the NBA, legitimately. So that could help out Coulibaly a lot. I think I'm going to give the edge to Keyshawn George right now. I just think they're insanely high on what he is, because he can do it on both ends. He can handle the basketball. Got better as a downhill creator last year. So I would put him somewhere between the 2 and 3 with DiBonsa, and then you're going to have Davis and Sarr as your starting front court.
So how do you think they're going to manipulate these lineups? Because as you mentioned, at the height of his powers, Trae Young was one of the most dynamic creators in the NBA, and you have a really dynamic shooter in Trae Johnson. How are they going to manipulate minutes to make sure that you still get a good amount of time with the two Trays on the floor?
That's what's going to be interesting. I think Trae Johnson will play plenty. The one thing that he has evidently been working on this offseason, one, putting on size, which is good because he's going to need that to improve what he can be defensively. Because size-wise and in wingspan speaking, Trae Johnson has a little bit more untapped potential, I would say, in the defensive side, but he definitely struggled in that area as a rookie. He also struggled to get to his spots at times and, you know, put the ball on a string and generate his own shot. That's something he could definitely improve upon. But given his ability to shoot the ball, which is an elite skill for Johnson, he has that going for him. Not every NBA player can enter the league and have an elite skill. Trae Johnson has an elite skill to shoot the basketball right now. So regardless if you have him in the starting lineup or not, I think he's going to get plenty of opportunities to be a microwave scorer off the bench because of what he can do from the outside. They're going to need him in playing in the offense with Trae Young. We saw it on display actually a couple of times in the 5 games that Trae Young did play. There were 2 or 3 that really stood out to me how well Trae Johnson was able to play, just because of how many open looks Trae Young could generate for everyone else. And that kind of applies to everybody on this roster. But it is going to be interesting how they manipulate a lot of these lineups going forward, because you have around 6 players on this team. I'd say you could kind of slot anywhere 2 through 4 right now, because they just love positional size and they love to draft these players that are a little bit longer, have a greater wingspan, so they can kind of manipulate and be a little bit flexible with where they put guys on the floor. So I think it's going to take time to really iron out what lineup makes the most sense. What's the closing lineup? What lineup do you have if you just need a stop at the end of the game? Because they just brought back Jameer Watkins on a 2-way deal as well. There's a lot of questions about what they can do lineup-wise.
Ben Strober, my guest here, the Locked On Wizards podcast. He joins me on 106.7 The Fan, D-Day in D.C. From what you have heard, one of my favorite things has been the video series they've done that's showcasing that a lot of the young guys have stayed to continue to work. And one of the reasons was that, you know, they had this goal of they wanted to be playing deep into the month of May and to June. Have you heard anything about how proud the front office has been about the amount of guys that have stayed and worked out over the offseason?
Yeah, they consistently talk about it. And I think they always point back to Keyshawn George and how much he's in the gym. I think if you watched one of the last videos they put out, they showed him showing up to the facility at around 5:45 in the morning, getting a workout in. And, you know, just in the couple press conferences they had for DiBonsa and then Felix Okpara as well, who they traded for in the second round, some of the people I was talking to over there were just continuously raving to me about how much Keyshawn George has been in the gym. They say he's putting on a lot of size right now. He's been diligent in the weight room, but he continues to put in these 2 to 3 hour long just basketball, like one-on-one sessions by himself where he's just working on his game constantly. And I think that kind of alludes to what he did last summer as well. We heard a bunch of times from Will Dawkins last year, and he told us, just wait until you guys see what Keyshawn George has been up to. And he came out the gates firing and really took a massive offensive jump in year number two. Same thing with Sarr. I know he's kind of on the shelf right now because of the fractured foot. So hopefully, you know, he'll get some adequate time before the season to hopefully return and be good to go. But I'm the most high on George right now. And based on what I hear from how the workouts go and how often he is in the building there, it seems like they got a good one in him.
It feels like he's positioning himself to kind of be the de facto leader.
That's a great point. And even in every single vlog they've made, or even the AJ DeBonsa YouTube videos where he's checking out the facility, Keyshawn is always there. I have not seen a clip with him not in the facility. Have you?
No, I haven't. And that's I think it's a good thing. I don't know what he's like in terms of like a locker room rah-rah guy, but I think having a guy that leads by example of, you got to match my energy and I'm always here, I think that's a really positive thing. You know, I think it almost feels very similar to like what Gilbert was when he was here. As crazy as Gilbert was personality-wise, which thankfully Keyshawn is not that, he was a gym.
I actually have a great anecdote for you about Keyshawn's leadership ability that I noticed. There was one specific moment in a game, and there were a lot of meaningless games that were played last year where they were out of it early on, obviously based on what was happening. And I can't even remember if Keyshawn was playing in this game or not, because he was out for the final month of the season with the elbow injury. I think he was playing this night. It might have been back in February or January. Justin Champagny, who's one of the better players on the team right now as well, I forgot to mention where he's going to fit in rotationally at this point also. He went up for a layup, and it kind of like spun out, and he was down on the ground for a second. I think he was pretty shocked that it didn't go down. And as everyone was pushing in transition, Champagny was kind of sitting on the ground on the baseline with his head in his knees. And I saw Keyshawn George leap out of his seat, ran down the baseline and grabbed Champagny and threw his ass back onto the floor. I was really impressed by him doing that. I was like, wait a second. This is real leadership from a second year player that just leapt up out of his seat and was like, come on, man, you got to get back on defense. And Champagny actually ended up turning it up from there and had a pretty good rest of the quarter from what I can remember. So that stuck out. I think you might be onto something with his de facto leadership coming into play here.
So final thing for you, Ben, that is a great story, by the way. Final thing here, I kind of was doing this exercise and I was like, all right, it's the off season. I'm fully guzzling Kool-Aid. Who is Washington better than right now in the East? And there's a surprising amount of teams that I think they could go toe-to-toe with right now. I think you take the Knicks out of it. I think you take Philadelphia out of it, maybe Detroit, and then Toronto now that Kawhi is there. But everybody else, I feel like the Wizards have a really good shot, even if LeBron goes to Cleveland, because I just don't think that team plays enough defense. How good do you think Washington could be if everything goes really, really well and everyone stays relatively healthy?
It's really hard to say because everyone in the East, I think outside of the Celtics, in my opinion, has gotten better in some way. Philadelphia has gotten really good, and I wouldn't rule them out as a possibility to land LeBron James in this whole thing because he might view them as a realistic path to a title playing in Philadelphia, which I would hate. I would despise that so much. But with every team kind of seemingly getting better, the only teams I could really point to in this conference that I think will be bad are Brooklyn and Milwaukee, maybe Chicago. Chicago will be fun, but I don't think they'll be very good yet. Caleb Wilson's going to be pretty exciting to watch in his rookie season. But otherwise, the Pacers are getting Haliburton back, which will make them interesting again. They were very actively tanking, doing whatever they could to try to keep their draft pick, and it ended up not working out for them because of the Zubac trade. I mean, Zubac is a good player. I don't know if it was worth trading the fifth overall pick for him, essentially, but he is a good player, so that will help him out. They'll be back in the thick of things for sure as long as Haliburton is good to go. The Celtics are interesting, and they always whoop the Wizards' butt every single time they play. I mean, I know that was a Brown only led team last year, except for I think one of the matchups at the end of the year, Tatum was actually back against the Wizards. But it seems like the Celtics are pretty much banking on Tatum resorting back to his form pre-injury, which I guess is a little bit risky considering that now they have moved on from Jaylen Brown. I think they're the only team I could say has gotten a little bit worse this offseason just because they moved on from Brown and didn't get a lot back in return. I think the Wizards realistically can be competing for a play-in spot this year. I don't know if I would get too ambitious given how young they are still and how they only won 17 games last year to say that they could be top five or top six in the East But I think the play-in is definitely a feasible result.
Ben, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Always good to talk.
Yeah, Dan, have a good one. That Hassel news was also very surprising to me. I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, that was stunning. That's Ben Strober, Locked On Wizards. For those that did not catch that, Robert Hassel, DFA, the team brings up Eddie Yearn as a closer. We're still waiting the official lineup tweet. I would need to see if Cade Cavalli is officially good to go. He's scheduled to go. He's appealing his suspension, which would allow him eligible to play. But I want that to be official, and hopefully it is before we end up shop. One other thing that I did want to get to, Wizards news related, Patrick Ewing coming back to D.C. The Wizards are going to bring him on as an assistant. I'm really pumped with this sort of news. I do think that Ewing can be a really good teacher, and what I mean by that is you're basically going to have him work exclusively with the big guys. With Anthony Davis, but really it's with Alex Saar. And I get kind of jealous when I look at Victor Wembanyama, because Victor Wembanyama is given all of the answers to the test. He gets to work out with Hakeem Olajuwon. He gets to hang out with Kevin Garnett. He gets to be in a franchise that has Tim Duncan and David Robinson. I mean, this dude has everything that you could ask for in terms of resource. So I do like that the addition of Patrick Ewing, it feels like Washington is giving that to Alex Saar. Not to say that he's going to be Victor Wembanyama, but if that guy is getting all the resources to develop his game, why would you not fight to do the same thing? And I think there's some things that Patrick Ewing can really help Alex Saar with that in the long term are going to be really, really beneficial. So really excited about that move. Nats pregame comes your way in 13 minutes. We close up shop, a little bit of Nats talk, a little bit of World Cup talk as we return here. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. D-Day in D.C., Nats pregame coming up in just a matter of moments here on 106.7 The Fan. The Nationals got the Pirates. Cade Cavalli slated to get the start today. Nats need this one. What happened yesterday was a bit of a disaster defensively, so they need to get back in the win column, win the series, move forward, and take a winning record closer and closer to the All-Star break. We also got some World Cup matches, Brazil and Norway at 4 p.m., so you're going to get to see big Erling Haaland, the guy that I think looks like Thor for Norway, take on Brazil.
That's a good comparison.
But it is, isn't it? The game that is going to be the most, I think, crazy is Mexico and England being played in Mexico City. That atmosphere is going to be one of one. I hope that whatever takes place tomorrow when USA takes on Belgium in Seattle, which is a perfect place for that game to take place because of the atmosphere, I hope it is even a fraction of how good and how crazy it's going to be tonight in Mexico City. You got those two teams squaring off, and obviously Team USA plays on Monday. No Flo Balogun in that one, but if they win, they get the winner of Spain and Portugal. Spain and Portugal plays first on Monday. Team USA is in action at 8 p.m., on Monday. So a lot of really good World Cup action. And Wes, I know you're pulling for England. You told me you got the jersey on in studio.
I do. Yeah, I think Harry Kane and Bukayo Saka and Jude Bellingham, I think they can do it down in Mexico. I know there's a altitude issue. Have you seen that?
Oh, I have seen that. The altitude, I was not aware how high above sea level Mexico City was. And trust me, when we got the story that the players of England, in order to help deal with the elevation, are using and are allowed to use Viagra. That is sports radio,
which I didn't realize helped.
I didn't realize that helped either. I mean, I knew it helped in certain areas. I didn't know it helped with elevation. That's new
to
me.
Yes, it does help.
Yeah, it helps in other areas, allegedly. It could also give you one of the craziest offside penalties that you will ever come across.
I've seen those videos, too.
I mean, you never know what could happen. So if nothing else, you got to watch for that reason and that reason only. But the World Cup games have been a lot of fun. The matches have been a lot of fun. And I traditionally am not really a soccer guy. But I was texting back and forth with one of my guys who is like diehard soccer. And he's been trying to convince me to jump over to the soccer bandwagon for a long time. He said, you got to choose a Champions League team, bro. You got to be on it. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I will, because I've actually enjoyed the World Cup in a way that I didn't think I would. So that's been they got me. FIFA, you hooked me a little bit to where I actually care about soccer a little bit now. That's going to do it for us. Big thanks to Ben Strober and Al Galdi for joining. For our guy Wes in our DC studios doing a great job producing this show. We get Nats baseball coming up pregame. Nats, Pirates, Cade Cavalli on the mound. Going to be a fun one. Enjoy the Sunday. Hit me up on Twitter at the Denton Day. We're out of here.